These habitual imperfections are, for example, a common custom of much speaking, or some slight attachment which we never quite wish to conquer, such as that to a person, a garment, a book, a cell, a particular kind of food, tittle-tattle, fancies for tasting, knowing or hearing certain things, and such like. Any one of these imperfections, if the soul has become attached and habituated to it, is of as great harm to its growth and progress in virtue as though it were to fall daily into many other imperfections and usual venial sins which proceed not from habitual indulgence in any habitual and harmful attachment, and will not hinder it so much as when it has attachment to anything. For as long as it has this, there is no possibility that it will make progress in perfection, even though the imperfection be extremely slight. For it comes to the same thing, whether a bird be held by a slender cord or by a stout one, since, even if it be slender, the bird will be well held as though it were stout. For so long as it breaks, it will not fly away. It is true that the slender one is the easier to break. Still, easy though it be, the bird will not fly away if it be not broken. And thus the soul that has attachment to anything, however much virtue it possess, will not attain to the liberty of divine union. For the desire and the attachment of the soul have that power which the sucking fish is said to have when it clings to a ship. For though but a very small fish, if it succeed in clinging to the ship, it makes it incapable of reaching the port, or of sailing on at all. It is sad to see certain souls in this plight. Like rich vessels, they are laden with wealth and good works and spiritual exercises, and with the virtues and the favors that God grants them, and yet, because they have not the resolution to break with some whim or attachment or affection, which all come to the same thing, they never make progress or reach the port of perfection, though they would need to do no more than make one good flight, and thus to snap that cord of desire right off, or to rid themselves of that sucking fish of desire which clings to them. It is greatly to be lamented that when God has granted them strength to break other and stouter cords, namely, affections for sins and vanities, they should fail to attain to such blessing because they have not shaken off some childish thing which God had bidden them to conquer for love of Him, and which is nothing more than a thread or a hair. It is worse. Not only do they make no progress, but because of this attachment they fall back, lose that which they have gained, and retrace that part of the road along which they have traveled at the cost of so much time and labor. For it is well known that, on this road, not to go forward is to turn back, and not to be gaining is to be losing. This our Lord desired to teach us when He said, "He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scatters." He that takes not the trouble to repair the vessel, however slight be the crack in it, is likely to spill all the liquid that is within it. The preacher taught us this clearly when he said, "He that contemns small things shall fall by little and little." For as he himself says, "A great fire comes from a single spark." And thus one imperfection is sufficient to lead to another, and these lead to yet more. Wherefore, you will hardly ever see a soul that is negligent in conquering one desire, and that has not many more arising from the same weakness and imperfection that this desire causes. In this way, they are continually filling. We have seen many persons to whom God has been granting the favor of leading them a long way into a state of great detachment and liberty, yet who, merely through beginning to indulge some slight attachment under the pretext of doing good or in the guise of conversation and friendship, often lose their spirituality and desire for God and holy solitude, fall from the joy and the wholehearted devotion which they had in their spiritual exercises, and cease not until they have lost everything, and this because they broke not with that beginning of sensual desire and pleasure, and kept not themselves in solitude for God. Upon this road we must ever journey in order to attain our goal, which means that we must ever be mortifying our desires and not indulging them. And if they are not completely mortified, we shall not completely attain. For even as a log of wood may fail to be transformed in the fire, because a single degree of heat is wanting to it, even so the soul will not be transformed in God if it have but one imperfection, although it be something less than voluntary desire. For, as we shall say hereafter concerning the night of faith, the soul has only one will, and that will, if it be embarrassed by aught and set upon by aught, is not free, solitary, and pure, as is necessary for divine transformation. Of this that has been said, we have a figure in the book of Judges, where it is related that the angel came to the children of Israel and said to them that because they have had not destroyed that forward people, but had made a league with some of them, they would therefore be left among them as enemies, that they might be to them an occasion of stumbling and perdition. And just so does God deal with certain souls, though he has taken them out of the world and slain the giants, their sins, and destroyed the multitude of their enemies, which are the occasions of sin that they encountered in the world, solely that they may enter this promised land of divine union with greater liberty. Yet they harbor friendship and make alliance with the insignificant peoples, that is, with imperfections, and mortify them not completely. Therefore our Lord is angry and allows them to fall into their desires and go from bad to worse. In the book of Joshua, again, we have a figure of what has just been said, where we read that God commanded Joshua at the time that he had to enter into possession of the promised land to destroy all things that were in the city of Jericho, in such wise as to leave therein nothing alive, man or woman, young or old, and to slay all the beasts, and to take naught, neither to covet aught of all the spoils. This he said, that we may understand how, if a man is to enter this divine union, all that lives in his soul must die, both little and much, small and great, and that the soul must be without desire for all this, and detached from it, even as though it is exited, even though it existed not for the soul, neither the soul for it. This Saint Paul teaches us clearly in his epistle to the Corinthians, saying, "This I say to you, brethren, that the time is short. It remains, and it behooves you, that they that have wives should be as white as if they had none, and they that weep for the things of this world as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as if they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they had possessed not, they that use this world as if it was used not." This the Apostle says to us in order to teach us how complete must be the detachment of our soul from all things if it is to journey to God. Chapter 12. The Answer to Another Question. An explanation of the kinds of appetites which can bring this harm upon a soul. We could explain this night of sense at greater length by mentioning everything relevant to the kind of damage the appetites cause, for they injure not merely in the ways described, but in many others as well. What we have explained, however, is sufficient for our purpose. It has probably been understood how the mortification of the appetites can be called night, and how suitable it is for a person to enter this night in his approach to God. The only point which remains before we treat in conclusion the method of entering this night is a response to a doubt which may bother the reader concerning this matter. First, can any appetite produce and cause the two evils mentioned above, namely, the privative, which removes the grace of God from the soul, and the positive, which causes the five cardinal kinds of harm we explained? Second, is any appetite, however slight or of whatever kind, enough to produce all these types of damage together? Or does each cause only a particular kind, in that one may produce torment, another weariness, and another darkness, etc.? To the first query, I answer that relevant to this privative evil, the loss of grace, only the voluntary appetites whose object may involve mortal sin can do this completely, for they deprive the soul of grace in this life and of glory, the possession of God in the next. To the second, my answer is that all of these positive evils are together occasions in the soul by each of these appetites. This is true whether the appetites concern mortal sin, venial sin, or imperfection. We call these evils positive, though in a certain fashion they are privative, because they are related to a conversion toward the creature, just as the privative evils correspond to the aversion from God. Yet there is this difference. The appetites for mortal sin produce total blindness, torment, filth, and weakness, whereas the others do not cause these kinds of harm in a complete and absolute degree. For they do not deprive the soul of grace, a privation that would give them full possession, since the death of grace means life for the appetites. But these smaller appetites do cause this damage in a lesser degree according to the loss of grace they occasion. The extent of the torment and blindness and weakness will correspond to the weakening of grace brought on by the appetites. It is noteworthy, however, that though each appetite causes all these kinds of positive harm, it will cause one kind principally and directly, and the others indirectly. For though it is true that a sensual appetite breeds all these kinds of evil, it principally and properly defiles the soul and the body. And an appetite of avarice produces them all too, yet principally and directly it causes afflictions. And one of vainglory similarly causes them all, yet principally and directly it darkens and blinds. And whereas an appetite of gluttony begets all the evils, it chiefly produces lukewarmness in virtue, and so on with the others. The reason any act of a voluntary appetite gives rise to all three evils together is that it directly opposes the acts of virtue, which generates the contrary effects. An act of virtue produces in a man mildness, peace, comfort, light, purity, and strength, just as an inordinate appetite brings about torment, fatigue, weariness, blindness, and weakness. Through the practice of one virtue, all the virtues grow. And similarly, through an increase of one vice, all the vices and their effects grow. These evils do not unmask themselves at the moment the appetite is being satisfied, since the pleasure of the moment is an obstacle to this. Yet sooner or later the harmful effects will certainly be felt. A good illustration of this is found in the Apocalypse. An angel commanded Saint John to eat the book which was sweet to the mouth, but in the belly sour. For the appetite, when satisfied, seems sweet and pleasant, but eventually the sour effect is felt. This truth will certainly be clear to anyone who allows himself to be carried away by his appetites. I am aware, however, that there are some so blind and insensible that they do not experience this bitter effect, since they do not walk in God. They do not perceive what keeps them from Him. I am not speaking here of the other natural involuntary appetites, nor of the thoughts that do not pass beyond the first movements, nor of the other temptations in which there is no consent. These temptations do not give rise to any of the evils previously mentioned, though the passion and disturbance they momentarily cause make it seem to a person that he is being defiled and blinded. Such is not the case. Rather, they occasion the opposite good effects. Insofar as a person resists them, he wins strength, purity, light, comfort, and many blessings. As our Lord told Saint Paul, virtue is made perfect in weakness. But the voluntary appetites bring on all these evils, and even more. That is why the chief concern of spiritual directors with their penitents is the immediate mortification of every appetite. The directors should make them remain empty of what they desire so as to liberate them from so much misery.